research from now from the business world is showing that people who are more self-aware tend to make better leaders because they're able to see things in a way which is not possible if you're not self-aware.
You're listening to episode 62 of the Calm Cafe. It's part two of my interview with Dr. Paramjit Singh. Our conversation around mindfulness. Part two, we cover off the three components of mindfulness. First one, pay attention. Number two, notice what is happening and not reacting. And part three, understanding that everything is temporary. Now, sit back and enjoy my conversation with Dr. Paramjit Singh here on the Calm Cafe.
I love podcasting. I love interviewing because we had some ideas to talk about today. And then after, and we talked about it, after that second question, we went down a completely different path, which is, there's no wrong interview, which is fantastic. But we eventually got to where I wanted to go, which is a bit more conversation about mindfulness. So how can, when we talk about decision-making and just the amount of noise, media noise and different Facebook noise, the amount of noise that we're bombarded with on a daily basis, how is that where mindfulness comes in, where we actually, in meditation, say, if I'm actually able to, before I make a life-changing decision, to actually sit down through meditation to block out that noise so I can really hear what I need to hear? Is that kind of an idea around mindfulness and meditation?
Yeah. I would say, I would preface my description of meditation because meditation has been exoticized a lot more than it needs to be. It seems like something you do in caves or, you know, half naked or in a harsh conditions. But meditation is simply a very systematic method of accessing your mind. And that's what it is. Literally, that's what it is. It has been actually pretty much given a shape and form in the media and the way it is understood, which is actually does a lot more disservice to the whole thing. And people get freaked out when I go and talk to people. And when they hear the word meditation, the first thing is, oh my God. Something like that. People automatically assume that it's actually religious stuff. You have to sit and chant some very esoteric things. But really, it means if you strip apart the baggage that comes around, meditation is a very wonderful way of systematically training your mind so it can be more efficient, more productive, more clear. That's exactly to me the meditation is, and that how the technique is. Rest is everything. Things have been added to it by the people, by whatever way they understand. To me, it's just simply allowing you opportunity to rest your mind so you can see things clearly, so that you can understand the things as they are. And we cannot understand or see things clearly unless we just simply allow the mind to rest. And mindfulness is a simply way of paying attention to what is happening in this moment. And how do we actually pay attention to, you know, how do we become aware of what's happening in this moment? We can do so by paying attention. Not judging, just simply paying attention. You know, and there's a very systematic way to do that. You know, we learn to pay attention. It's a kind of a mental capacity we all have to some extent. We all pay attention, but usually our attention works in two ways. One is we call attachment based, where it means that approach based, where it means that we are looking for the things we want, the things we like, we want them more. That's one way we pay attention. Another way is that we actually run away from the things which we don't like. That's the avoidance mode. But usually attention works in these things. We tend to be drawn toward the things we like. We tend to run away from the things we don't like. Mindfulness say that you cannot do that. If you want to understand how the real life works, how your mind functions, and how your brain makes decision, you have to actually come out of this automatic processing that happens, that you start liking what you like more, and you start avoiding what you don't like. You have to actually pay attention to the entire spectrum of the experience. So the way we train our mind to be more mindful is by simply, it's kind of a loosely three-step process. One is that we we intentionally pay attention to what is happening in this moment, both comfortable and uncomfortable. So that's the caveat here. You know, that's the caveat here. We are good at paying attention when things are comfortable. We are also very bad at paying attention when things get uncomfortable. We tend to run away from it. But mindfulness practices, if you want to understand how things work, you need to just pay attention to the entire spectrum of the things, both comfortable and uncomfortable. And the second part of the practice is, and the training is, that don't react to it, just like immediately. Just for a moment, just notice whatever is happening. Okay? Don't automatically consider that things you like are automatically going to be that way for the rest of the time. And don't automatically assume that things you don't like is going to be like that for the rest of the time. Just don't react to the things. Even if you can actually postpone your reaction for a moment, that's enough for this. And the third part of the training is understanding that things are always temporary. Nothing in this universe is actually here going to be around forever. Everything has a shelf life. Some things have a longer shelf life, other things have a shorter shelf life. For example, our bodies have a longer shelf life. Our emotions have a shorter shelf life, and you can notice the emotion can come, stay there for a moment, and disappear. You know, and look around. Everything in this universe has a shelf life. So if things are temporary, that understanding allows us to actually develop a strategy, a mental strategy, to notice things just as they arrive in our landscape. And don't react to it. Mostly we react to things automatically. When good things happen, we automatically assume this is a great thing has happened. But we all know from life experience that things that start with the good don't end up like that, you know, because that things don't have inherent quality to that. There's no goodness to good things. Good or bad becomes when things become or collide with our expectations. So mindfulness training is a very systematic way of training our mind to be present in this moment and not react. And another way to is it's a kind of a non-adopting a non-reactive, curious, open-minded approach to the emerging experience. You know, say for example, somebody actually, you know, the example we are talking about, you're driving on a highway and somebody actually flicks a bird for you. Your automatic tendency is to actually react. You know, what if rather than reacting, you just notice, and you notice that you're just about to react, but you don't react. By doing so, you automatically chip away the old habit pattern. That's how we change habits. Literally, if I have to describe mindfulness, it's a simply understanding and clarifying the old unwholesome habit patterns and just changing them to wholesome ones. Because each time I don't react to the things which bothers me, I actually chip away that old habit pattern. And if I do it long enough and consistently enough, it doesn't have to be years on end. Actually, research shows that within very short period of time, the part of the brain where actually mediate those things actually starts to become better. So within a couple of months, the brain starts to develop new patterns, architectural patterns. I'm not talking about the functional patterns. So to be precise here, mindfulness is simply an ability to pay attention to what is happening in this moment. And the way we train for it is by intentionally paying attention to the entire spectrum of the experience. That's the first part. The second part is not react to it, at least immediately. And third part is keeping in mind that things are always temporary. The whole enterprise of mindfulness is literally built up on that.
Thank you so much. I had my pen and paper and actually wrote that down. So I'll remind people on the introduction to get their pen and paper out. And I like that I wrote down the piece was there is no good or bad. It is the experience colliding with our expectations. So when something, it's all again based on our expectation. If I go with something and my expectation is this, and I get something different, based on that, on the difference, I then end up judging it or say whether it's good or bad, and that's. There is no good or bad. It's my opinion or my experience based on what happens to me. Yes.
Exactly. I mean, if you look at it, it means two people go for an interview, one gets the job, one doesn't. So the, for the person who gets the job, that's a positive experience. That's a good experience. And the person who actually didn't get the job, that's a negative experience. But it, the interview, it doesn't have the quality to it. It's just literally the expectation. The one whose expectations are met, that's a positive experience. One whose expectations were not met, that's a negative experience. And I think once we start thinking about it, it actually liberates us from braiding ourselves from all the things. You know, we self-criticize. Because there's the life is very complex, and the complex decision-making process plays out in a variety of things. It means except some very small things where the income input variables and the output variables are pretty simple. In real life, things are actually a lot more complex. So when people, especially when people come to my program and they will say that I take everything personally, that's a problem, because when we take things personally, and I would put it out that it's we are human, so we feel bad about that. There's nothing wrong about feeling bad about when things don't go wrong the way we want them to. But I think where it becomes unhealthy is that when that feeling of badness continues to linger year after year once the event has passed. So for example, if I didn't get a job, I think it's a reasonable for me to actually feel bad about that. But how long that feeling stretches, that's where the problematic part is. That, you know, I think it's useful for us to experience the emotion, experience the sadness, but it is not useful for us to actually carry on, linger on for the rest of our life. This is where it becomes negative. Mm-hmm. And sometimes when we don't actually express or understand emotions, that's what we try to do. We push those emotions away into the dark room of some hidden corridors in our mind, and they keep on festering there.
And as a quick note to that, it's completely a little bit different. But so my one son, I have two sons. So one son is not as emotional. The other one is more. So for him, there's maybe like say bigger emotional outbursts. But the cool thing is once the outburst is done, it's temporary. And the key is, okay, pay attention. So there's an outburst. Don't react, which is a great thing for parents. And then it's temporary, because the outburst, once it's done, it's done. And then he comes back out and then you continue on. But for him, he's actually released that negative energy. Where if my other son, if he just swallows it, it's going to sit. And this is where we do some work with the color mirrors. As that anger and built up emotions just sit further inside of me, I end up developing, you know, stomach issues, liver issues, all kinds of different issues, because I've actually have this built up emotional and anger sitting inside of me, and it just doesn't know what to do. That's a different topic for a different day. Now, what I want to do is give you a chance to share where, so I know you run workshops in Hamilton. I think you have a website, but where can people learn some more information about the workshops that you run? Or if they just want to learn more about what we've talked about today, how could they get in touch with you or learn more about what you do?
So I run a variety, two tiers of the program. One is called for the community program, which I run mostly. These are repetitive, regular programs that run out of Hamilton and Brantford. So there's it's a 6-week program I run. It's called Introduction to Mindfulness Practice. This is a very skill-based program, practice-focused, where it means that the conversations are kept to minimum. I provide all the background material science for people to read at home. But when they come to the class for 2 hours, we spent around 90% of the 2 hours on actually working on the skills. Because it is my personal experience that it's the skill of the technique which actually works, not the intellectual understanding. For example, we can sit and talk about what mindfulness, what conceptually it is, how does it changes the brain and all those kind of things, which can be wonderful motivational hooks. But once we go home, the shelf life of self-hope help things are actually very short. So I want people to come to my program and spend the time working on the skill. So when they're out after 6 weeks, they have some sense how they can work with the thing. So for example, if somebody has anger issues, they can only apply these three principles: how to notice when the anger is coming, how not to react to it, and understanding that things actually, once he or she doesn't react to the anger, they actually experience the temporariness of the emotions in itself. But that can only be done if they have developed some skill. So these are very skill-based programs because I value practice. That's the only thing that makes a difference. And that's one thing which I'm also very antsy about these days, because with popularization and commercialization of these techniques, an impression is being given that you don't have to actually do the hard work of skill development. I want to put it publicly that actually this skill is no different than any other skill. If you're good at something, you're most likely good at something because you burnt a midnight oil, worked days and nights after, done it for a long period of time, and you became good at whatever skill you have. It's very rare to find somebody blessed that you come equipped with all the skills from the beginning. But most of us, if you're good at something, we have done the hard work. So mindfulness is not a very different. It's a very skill which works in the same way, that the more time you spend on it, the better you get over the period of time. All of us respond to it differently, like any other skill, but it is literally a skill. And the second tier program I run is actually for the corporates. So the professional development retreats and workshops, for invited workshops or regular ones, I have done 6 week introduction to mindfulness practice within corporate sector. They wanted me to come to their in-house precinct, and I did the same 6 week, slightly adapted to the cultural needs, but still very much focused on the practice focused. And some of those folks actually from the corporate sector actually came to my community programs because they wanted to refresh the skills. I also actually in the middle of running a program for Willis Towers and Watson, the insurance company. And we have been doing it since December. And we are hoping to actually expand it to all their employees. Another thing I want to put out, that stress-related cost to society is actually huge. Recently, last month, International Journal of Occupational Health Psychology published a meta-analysis where it said that in Canada alone, the economic cost to all of us is around from the stress-related problems is from around $2.5 billion to $10 billion. So that comes to almost $131 to $486 each one of us pay for when people get sick, you know. And Sun Life Canada pegged out that wellness programs shaves off around 1.5 to 1.7 days of absenteeism from any company, which means translates around $230 or $235 per year. So saved. So I think this is the stuff I'm interested in bringing to the corporate, that by training your mind, you change everything. One of my motto to tell people is that the mind is the mirror through which everything happens. You know, this is one thing where if you change one thing, it changes everything you do, because mind is the mechanism. You know, if my mind is calm, my relationships are going to be calm. If my mind is calm and collected and clear, the decision I'm going to make are going to be clear-headed. If my mind is settled, then when I sit and have a relationship with other people, that settlement is going to be in that part, you know? So mind is at the core of everything. For any CEO, you know, you don't want a CEO who is actually running around like a headless chicken. You want a CEO, especially in the modern world, because things have changed. It's no longer the same the way the corporations used to work. It's highly uncertain. And we know from research that people who practice mindfulness, especially in leadership domain, they are more tolerant of ambiguity, because ambiguity is one thing which is kind of become a constant in business world these days. You know, how to tolerate uncertainty, how to have a clear-headedness, how to become more aware of your needs, because we know that lack of awareness impacts our own personal health. So when I'm aware of my own needs, I, by virtue of that, I'm also aware of my own employees' needs. We know from research that people who are leaders who are more self-aware, their employees actually suffer less because they're able to connect to them at that level. Mm-hmm. So I'm interested in bringing these skills in a kind of a no-nonsense way into the business world, that you know, you train your mind and everything you do with that mind changes automatically. My motto is simply, I want people to know that you train one thing, just like as math, you know from mathematical perspective, that in the long scheme of things, you change the angle slight bit, it takes you actually entirely in a different space and time. And I would say the same thing happens. You learn simply to become aware of your thought process and not react, you notice it actually solves so many issues that afflict us. You know, then you are not stressed out, that your blood pressure doesn't shoot up, you know, then you don't get the stomach issues, because now the reaction that you actually got into the habit has been actually broken. The old habit patterns have been, you know, are slightly unwinding. And new wholesome patterns. Now you don't freak out for every drop of fat. And that has a real life consequences. When we freak out and when we are afraid, it has a physiological consequences in our body. You know, it's a toxic consequences in the body. It has also performance consequences. We know that we don't do very well when we're antsy, when we are afraid, when we are uncertain. So I think mindfulness is a wonderful skill. And one of the beautiful part of this whole thing is that you learn for yourself, but actually it helps you in almost everything you do. I often get the comments that usually I go for corporate training and the training is done with the intention that something would happen to the company. But in the mindfulness programs, you come to the program and you come to the professional development, you get developed. At the same time, you're actually going to help the company develop itself. So nowhere you get a technique which is actually have a dual advantage. You know, it's a kind of a double investment, double return on a single investment. You know? So that's what I do. And I would like people to know that meditation, there's no religious stuff. It's simply a simple systematic way to train your mind. And I would actually ask them, if you're doubtful, skeptic, you're most welcome. I will come and sit with you and we will practice together. And if you find a trace of religion, I would not ever bug you again. But to be a scientist, if you are thinking, scientist is the one who explores. Scientist is the one who doesn't make a judgment. You know, I tend to think that mindfulness technique is a wonderful way to actually test drive that idea, that just sit and explore your own mind. That's as scientific as it gets.
Thank you so much for today. It's been amazing. I have a whole page of notes, as sometimes I do. And the parting thought is, the mind is the mirror. And I like the fact, I'll add my little accounting piece, return on investment, times two, because you cannot just get the benefit from it inside of a business without the advantage of having someone take that same work that they've done and use it in their everyday life, in their home life. So there's no bad investment in mindfulness.
It's actually, if I can add to that, means the investment can be actually manifold, because anything you do that will carry the impact of the practice. You know, your relationships, your personal health, your mental health, your professional life, your civic life, everything is actually, because you know, the mind is the center of everything. And if the people are actually looking for more information, we have a fully functional, very extensive website. It has a background scientific aspect. If you are interested in exploring the science behind it, there's, we have dedicated pages to it. So my website is paramjeetsingh.com. So it's my name, my first name, last name.com. And or if you search my name, it shows up. It's pretty much ranked high. There's a lot of things to explore on it. There's a lot of DIY tools. For example, some things you can test drive on your own. There's a whole section on that basis of it. I will invite people to test drive these ideas. You know, not take anybody for word. Means I when I go and teach, I tell people, you absolutely don't take a word I say here for anything. But I invite you to explore it. Be a scientist, be a rationalist, real in the real sense of term. Explore it and then arrive at your own decisions. You know, my task here is to give you the techniques. Your task is to test drive it. Mm-hmm. The only way you can test drive is by practicing, just like you have done with so many other things.
Just be curious.
Just be curious. There's actually just be curious, open-minded, accepting. Accepting in the sense that you acknowledge the reality of the moment in this time. It is not about giving up. Accepting sometimes is used in a very different way. But accepting to us as practitioners is simply acknowledging the reality of the moment. In this moment, my mind is very edgy. And that's the reality of the moment. It doesn't have to be next moment. It doesn't have to be for the rest of the time. But for this moment, my mind is edgy. And accepting that doesn't make us anyway give up to the despair that it has to be this way for the rest of it. Yeah. So wonderful. Just be curious.
All right. I want to thank you so much for stopping by the Calm Cafe today. I want to thank the individual listener. Thank you for sharing your time with us today and enjoying this conversation about mindfulness. And if you like what you've heard, don't be afraid to share, like, hop over to iTunes, give us a comment, some feedback, and like I said, reach out to Dr. Paramjeet Singh. And you can also check the show notes if you don't know the address, but it's all there. And again, thank you for joining me on the Calm Cafe.
Thank you, Dwayne, and thank you for all the listeners who tuned in. Look forward to talking to you again. Thank you so much. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you.